Well, we thank all the first responders and everybody working hard. And I know, guys, we always mention it each week. And, Bill, I got an email from a guy you know. Remember Mike Huey?
From
from the fantasy camp.
Sure,
sent me a really nice email about David Baldini, Dr. David Baldini. And he has got a great nationwide article this week recognizing his efforts as a first responder. And he's on the baseball team that Mike Huey plays with. He's a member of the Galileo Italian Club in Richmond. And he's a great baseball fan, and he was recognized for the good work he does. So I thought since you were on, and you know Mike Huey, how much it means to him. But David Baldini, doctor on the front line, so we appreciate it.
Yeah, I talked to Mooch over the week about him, and I read that same story. And just the energy that these people have daily to go in and out and work the shifts and how many hours they do, you just can't commend them enough. And it just goes to show how many people are in this. And that's why, you know, you want to keep these shelter in places in place so it doesn't spread. And with the warm weather in Arizona, warm weather here, that's what they're trying to control. And I think all these first responders are saying, you know, stay home. This is what we want you to do. And we have to make that known. People need to understand that.
Very good. Well, we got a few texts from people over the break here. One talks about the guy in, remember the guy in Shea Stadium with the signs all the time? Did they have that while you were around? You know, he'd be in the stands with the signs?
You know, I remember when Hunter Pence was getting followed with the signs. Yeah. He did, you know, when Twitter first came out, he made some comments, and everybody was following Hunter around with signs. And I don't remember all the details. I'm not familiar with the guy that you're talking about in New York. It's not coming to my mind here.
Yeah, this was, you would have to remember when you were a kid. It was early days of the Mets, and he would hold up in each hand, you know, like part of a word. And, you know, like colossal and two different names or amazing, you know, that kind of stuff. And he was very famous. And that's really where a lot of these, you know, banners and signs and all that started with the Mets in New York. When the Mets were awful, people brought stuff to the park and Casey Stengel loved it. And there were days, doubleheaders on Sunday, they would have people, you know, circle the field with the signs and everything else. It was a big deal back then.
Well, that's fantastic because, you know, you don't see that stuff today as much. You know, it's just a different time. And those types of things are really cool to remember certain individuals. Who's the guy the A's had? Was it Crazy George? You know, he was around banging his drum all the time. But, you know, who's done a really good job with all that is certainly our San Francisco Giants. You think about the marketing of the baby giraffe and, you know, when Melky Cabrera was here, the milkmen would come out to the ballpark. Myself as a coach, I used to love seeing those guys there. You know, it brings a smile to your face, and, you know, we do such a good job with that as well. So it's fun to see those personalities in the stands to make the game even that more exciting.
Do you have a Panther hat?
You know, what I was going to say is don't forget about the guy that brought the moose head in Kansas City Royals when you played in the World Series. The guy to bring the whole moose head in with the ears and everything. That was amazing to me when I saw that. I'm like, how do you get that in, first of all? How are they letting him in? But sometimes, they did a lot of things like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, whoa, do you have a panda hat?
I don't, but my sister does. I mean, I got a picture of her at the house when, you know, Pandamania was going on. She had the hat on, right, like everybody else during those World Series runs with Panda doing his thing. So I don't own one, but I know where I can get one if need be.
Really? Yeah, and we got another text from someone who is a Philly Fanatic fan who had – talked about the Philly Fanatics ritual before he got on the field, which was quite interesting to loosen up before he got on the field. So I'll leave it at that. So interesting. Yeah, boy, it's a fun part of baseball, isn't it? When I grew up, so what did we have? We went to Ebbets Field. We saw the Brooklyn Dodgers. And you guys probably don't remember the clown Emmett Kelly. And he was the bum. And he was at Ringling Brothers Circus. And he would come out before the game. He was dressed as a bum, so to speak. And if you know the picture of the old Brooklyn Dodger bum, all the cartoons, that was Emmett Kelly. And he would come out with a little broom, and he'd sweep up and all that stuff and look very sad. And that was what he would do before every game, Emmett Kelly.
I'll have to look him up. I'm not familiar with him. So it'd probably be fun one day to look at all these people on some clips. Yeah. You can find some clips. I bet there's a lot of entertaining stuff out there.
Yeah, I forget I'm talking to kids, you know.
You know, the other thing that comes to mind is the Crazy Crab when he tried to make his way into Candlestick Park. And I'll never forget, it was one of our first, you know, my first couple of years, and they brought this guy in the locker room and they said, hey, you know, we're going to try this Crazy Crab. We want you guys to throw stuff at him. And I remember him just putting the Crazy Crab thing, and he came out and everybody was throwing stuff at him, and he had welts on his head and his face. And I remember Darrell Evans going, hey, you better come in with some body armor next day because you're going to get killed. And that was the thing, that when Pat Gallagher put it together, the Crazy Crab was the mascot you hated. And that was something new, and then that was just a brutal attack on the Crazy Crab. But, of course, you got to give a high five to Lucille because he sure turned it around. And fan favorite here at Oracle Park for many years. And, you know, I know Lou very well, and never missed a game so far since the season started in the year 2000. And he's had a couple daughters, and he watched one daughter give birth, and he was back on the field that night. So tip of the hat for Lucille, because he sure brings a lot of excitement to Giant fans.
Yeah, well, how about when the park opened? Well, didn't they have that thing in right field, the Rusty or something?
Yeah, Rusty was sliding across the outfield a few times, and he didn't last very long, old Rusty. I think he went by the wayside like the Crazy Crab, but at least the crab, the Crazy Crab at least made a comeback. I think Gallagher and Mario Alioto brought him back, didn't they, for one or two times? But no, Rusty, after that first season, I don't think we've ever seen him again. The whole thing is gone. Of course, the line, you know, the pulley is still out there in right field where he would slide across. So, yeah, no, he used to run across there.
I like that. Boy, I'll tell you, you know, there's funny things at the ballpark, isn't it? Other than the game, and which we love the game, and we remember so much about the game. But look at all the little things about the ballpark that we remember. Isn't it something?
It really
you get me thinking about them. Yep.
No, go ahead,
Bill.
No, I was going to say it's just the fans. It's fan support. That's what comes to when you go to the ballpark. And I think the biggest thing when it turned into Orange Friday, when everybody wore orange and you saw guys with orange suits and hats and painted fingers, I think that was one of the coolest things the Giants did for Friday, bringing Orange Friday. But I'm right there with you, Marty. Every day is different. Everything is different. And it's a joy that we're all missing right now.
Go ahead, Will.
No, I don't have much to add. I agree with Bill and what we're saying. It's fun to think about these things. I don't spend much time thinking about them, but when you start talking about, you know, whether it's the Fanatic or Max Pacton and all these things that you see around the ballpark, it is quite amazing how many different items come to mind that they give you a little bit of joy. So it's a cool thing to think about.
Yeah, I like it. I like Mr. Met. I like that. You know, they got a Mrs. Met with them. I like that.
You like the song in the seventh inning. That's what you like. When they put the top on the Gila. That's the song. I enjoy hearing that every seventh inning.
I do like
myself.
That. It's a good one for me.
Yeah.
It's fun. I love it. It's a good discussion. It really is of this part of baseball. But let's talk a little A's Giants. And, well, I'll start with you. The rivalry. I don't know. Maybe we don't give it enough play. But the games are brutal. They're close games. The teams have played since 97, and there aren't many games separating the wins and losses. But when you think about this A's-Giants thing, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind, it's no matter, you know, if you're good or bad that year, it's always going to be a battle. You know, the all A's always play us tough. I think they have us beat in the, you know, the history of the series, although it's pretty close. But, you know, Bo Mel does a great job, I think, in more recent year with the club. They're a talented group. But the thing that also stands out to me is how different the game is. I mean, we have such a home field advantage, I think, in this series. And I don't know what the numbers say, but I feel like when we're at home, I feel like we have a much better chance to beat them. Of course, the pitcher's hitting. And in the American League, these guys don't hit. Sometimes they don't even let certain pitchers swing. So it's an out. And then you go over to Oakland, and it's just a completely different atmosphere, right? Now you have the DH, and it's more in tune to what they do. They have that extra hitter. We got to throw somebody in that role, and it's a battle. They are a tough team, and they, no matter, you know, where they're at, they always play the Giants tough.
Mm. Bill, games come to mind for you? Some of the A's Giant games or moments that come to your mind?
Well, you know, back in the day when we played, it was just the Bay Bridge, you know, three games before the season. And you leave spring training, you play them, you know, six, seven times there. And now you're playing them in a three-game series. And it meant some things, but it wasn't the magnitude as it was now with the Bay Bridge trophy and things like that that's added up to it. Of course, the first thing you think of is half A's, half Giant hat. That was back in my era that people still wear. But it's been a good rivalry, like Ron's saying. These games are close. And, of course, the 89 World Series with the earthquake, that stands out because the A's did beat the Giants. But I was so excited for that series. I thought that was going to be a seven-game series, just the way the Giants and the A's are playing at that time. And it was just a tragic time for the Bay Area. And sure enough, you had to crown a World Series winner. But I'm right there with Ron. I think some of the great players, Eric Burns, I remember him wearing out the Giants constantly when he was with the A's. And you go back to Dave Stewart and Bobby Welch back in the day, and some really good quality baseball between the Giants and the A's, and it's still like that.
Mm. Well, I was going to go back to June 4th of 2000. I just looked randomly. I just took a year just to look up a couple of games. So the Giants win. It's at Oakland. You win 18-2. And Jeff Kent goes four for six with five RBIs and three runs. And Ramon Martinez, now we've done shows for 10 years already. I don't think you and I have ever mentioned this guy. Ramon Martinez, 3 for 4, three runs, two RBIs. Come on, Ramon Martinez, who's he?
Yeah, no, Ramon Martinez, what a good guy he was. I mean, he didn't get a whole lot of playing time, but he had a very serviceable career as a utility infielder. Could play short, second, third, and I can't recall. I think we traded for him, and we got him from another organization and maybe started in AA with us. But I loved him as an extra guy, a nice guy, very coachable, and he was always ready to play. You know, I mean, he worked his butt off, and when he got his opportunity, you know, he was typical to back in when Bill and I played. You wanted the defender, when you got a spot start, the utility guy, to not hurt you. You know, you want him to make all the routine plays, and if you got a little offensive out of him, you were happy. Of course, the game has changed so much now, but Ramon was that, and he was a nice little player. He could hit and run, hit behind the runner, would get a bunt down, winning player, and he had a nice career. So, you know, that game, that's certainly not in my memory bank, because that doesn't happen very often. I remember losing. I remember losing
nothing.
To the A's 16-0. Yeah,
right.
I think a right fielder made three errors, and Felipe, I remember talking to him, and he was just shaking his head all the way up the runway. A guy had three errors in the game, same outfielder.
Hey, how about Jared Parker? Didn't Parker hit three homers against the A's?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tuck. Yeah, he said he could hit that fastball. There's no doubt about it. You throw him a heater. They should have thrown him more breaking balls. I bet you they're all on fastballs.
Mm. Go ahead, Bill.
No, what I was just going to say is some of the games that just recently, over the past couple of years, are they a little more intense at all, Ron, because of the trophy, because of the Bay Bridge trophy, and how they made it such a huge thing now because, of course, they made the trophy out of the bridge and the story behind it. You know, I know the whole story because it came from NBC Bay Area, from Brody Brazil, and Ahmed did it. But is that something they fashion about? Is that something they worry about? Do they talk about it because they've done it twice, and the Giants won it last year and A's won it the first year. Is there really bragging rights about it, or is that just let's play three games and figure out who's going to win it?
Yeah, I think when you win it, you're happy and you talk about it. When you lose, you don't win that thing. You really don't think much about it. But I think it's more so for the fans in the Bay Area. Yeah. Look, I think the players, you know, they play every single day. You always want to beat your rivals in the Bay. You want to have bragging rights. But I don't think it sets that high up on their list because it's such a grind during the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you finish with the A's, you got to go on and play somebody else. So I think they enjoy going to Oakland. I think the guys enjoy driving over to Oakland. And, you know, they're at home and playing here in the Bay Area. I think they get a special feeling with the fans and the electricity that they have. So I think they really enjoy the experience of playing the A's.
Yeah, it's fun. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I think it's a rivalry we should publicize more and get into it more. Now, I looked up July 14th, 2000, and what struck me on this one, the Giants win the game, I think, 4-2. But, well, Mark Gardner, this is 2000. 7 innings, 4 hits, a couple of runs, no walks, 4 strikeouts, and Bonds hits his 30th home run. But we never talk about Mark Gardner as a pitcher and what he meant to this ball club.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, Gardy, not only was he an outstanding career as a pitcher, he was a tremendous coach, and we wouldn't have won 3 World Series without him down in the bullpen. And you mentioned 2000. You know, I remember we started him against the Mets. That's how good he was in 2000, I think, in that playoff series. And, you know, he was a guy that had a tremendous curveball. You don't see a lot of them today, but he wasn't overpowering with his fastball. I didn't see him earlier on in his career, but I think, you know, mid to late career, he could spot the fastball, and he was smart, and that's why he was a coach. He knew the hitters. He could read a swing. He would locate that ball, and he knew how to pitch, and that's why he was so good as a coach as well. And I'm glad you brought him up because Mark Gardner was an outstanding pitcher for the Giants, but, you know, even more so, a tremendous coach for the Giants and helped all these guys with rags. The jobs they did with the pitching staffs was just unbelievable through our 3 World Series runs.
Very good.
You know, that was one of the biggest things, Ron, I was going to say about Gardy. His communication to your pitchers when you had Rigetti and him as a combo was just so tight. All you heard was the communication and how much help both of those guys helped each other. And, you know, the bullpen coach is tough because he wants to implement some of his ideas, and sometimes that pitching coach doesn't want him to do it. But, boy, Rigetti and Gardner worked so well, and so many times talking to pitchers off the field, they were just so pat on the back to Gardy just as much as Rigetti. And I could see that because they work with those guys. They're there 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, going over stuff. And both those guys were such a stupendous, and I'm going to use that because I think Rigetti and Gardner are top 2 pitching coaches that the Giants have had in a long time.
Yeah. Boy, I loved him. He, you know, when I started in 96, he was always available. You know, yeah. I can't tell you how many interviews I did with him. I was just learning how to do it. But he was always so patient, and his wife, who we lost, a fabulous softball player, fabulous. And, good man. I'm glad that we could think about him. Yeah, Mark Gardner. Here's one more, Will and Bill. June 28th of 03. It's at home. The Giants end up winning 8-7 in 10 innings, but you're down 5-0 in the first inning, 6-0 in the fourth, then you go 6-6 to the bottom of the fourth, and you tie it up in the eighth, 7-7, and you win it 8-7 in the 10th inning. But what struck me about the game, the two pitchers who started, you'd think would have a great game, and one was Kirk Reeder, the other one was Barry Zito for the A's. How about that?
Yeah, the Giants winning his lefty, and of course Barry Zito was a stud back in those days. I mean, with his high riding fastball. We mentioned the curveball with Mark Gardner, and Barry Zito had a tremendous curveball as well. He was a little different pitcher than Gardy. He had more velocity, and you know, he threw a lot of high fastballs early in his career. Kind of how they're trying to teach guys to pitch today, right? Ride that fastball, power fastball up, and a lot of breaking stuff. You know, they want them throwing more breaking balls, keep people out of hitting fastballs and fastball counts. That's always been something, huh, Bill, that you want to do as a pitcher. You don't want to give in and throw a heater in a fastball count. But, yeah, Barry Zito was he was the man back there. That whole pitching staff, thank goodness I wasn't around for – a lot of that when they had Hudson, Zito, and Mulder doing their thing, they were extremely tough, and that was the backbone of that club.
Well, a name that came up in going through some of these, well, we've never talked about Michael Tucker, the outfielder.
Ooh. Yeah, Tuck.
What about him? Didn't we give Kansas City? I thought right from Kansas City, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if it was Cincinnati or Kansas City, but, Tuck was, he was a dead red hitter, and he was a guess hitter. A lot of people don't know that, you know. He would get in a hitter's count 2-0 or 1-0, and he'd come out of his pants taking a swing. Had a pretty good eye, but the one thing that struck me about him is he was a count hitter. If he got ahead in the count, he was swinging at the rosin bag because he was committed to hit. And other times, if he didn't want to swing, he'd take the pitch like he knew it was going to be a ball and it'd be a strike. So, but he was dangerous. He had a little bit of power, and he could hit a fastball. And if you could hit a fastball, a little power, you can play in the major leagues. And that's the type of guy he was. And played a serviceable outfield too. Could run a little bit. So he had to hit a little more to his game than just the bat.
Yeah, boy, Ron, I think he was hitting the middle of the order.
What I was going to say to Ron is, you mention a guy like that, Marty, and the first thing I can think of as a pitcher is you remember how aggressive a hitter he was, and that was the first thing that I could remember right off Michael Tucker. Don't throw him first pitch fastball, because he was lined it. He had lined it every time, because those are the kind of hitters that look first ball fastball. And as a pitcher, I remember this hack. I remember how hard he swung. But I tell you what, he did make contact. He was a very good outfielder.
Mm. Well, it's fun to do this. And I said this to you guys a couple of weeks ago. The time goes so fast, and then when you look back and you say, well, it's 10 years or 12 years, and then you bring names up, it sounds like it's 50 years ago. How the turnover, isn't the turnover amazing in baseball?
And I tell you what, Marty, you bring up names and, you go back, 20 years, 30 years, and players, just like coaches and Ron and fans, you remember moments and you remember certain players. And that's what's so great about the game of baseball, because it seems like all those names we threw around today, you remember a positive and then you remember, oh, he struggled here too. But, boy, some of the stories that come out of Ron, I just love listening to it, because he's been in the bunker watching it and listening into it and telling us the insight. And as a ex-pitcher, I love listening to stories like that. And that's what I love listening to Ron when he talks about some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun for me too, Marty and Bill, because you start talking about guys, Ramon Martinez and Michael Tucker, of course, Gardy, who, is in our memory banks, but some of these other players that came through. And it's an honor, honestly, for me to think back on all these great players that I've had the opportunity to coach and get to know a little bit. And it's a lot of fun for me, anytime you can think. I mean, we went through the World Series, and that's the ultimate, but there's a lot of good people out there, a lot of good players for the Giants. So I hope the listeners enjoy hearing about some of these guys.
Yeah, well, it just shows. I mean, I think 23 years for you in the big leagues. Am I right? Something like that?
This year it'll be 23 if we can get playing.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of – you've seen a lot. We say these numbers and they sort of just slide by. But in 23 years, you've seen a lot. You've seen 600 players, come through or something like that. It's amazing. I'll give you one last one. I don't know why, but it was stuck in my mind today. Davy Cruz, how about him?
Oh, Davy Cruz, yeah. I could go on and on about Davy Cruz. And I think we got him from Detroit. I can't remember. I think he was drafted by us, is what happened. And then we left him unprotected. That's what it was. And I think the Detroit Tigers pulled him off a double A or an A ball roster, and they made him his starting shortstop. and he had a real good career over there. And then at the end of his career, we signed him back when they let him go, and he was at the tail end of his career, and he played for Felipe and us. And what he was is he was as sure-handed as a Rich Aurelia or a Brandon Crawford, and he had a good arm. He didn't have much range. He had a knee injury. He wasn't moving too good. But one of the toughest decisions we've ever made was in L.A., when Devy Cruz was our starting shortstop, and his range was very limited. They had two infield hits in the game, and this was the second to the last day of the season when we had to win three games to win the division. And when Steve Finley hit the home run in extra inning games, well, one of the games that we lost, and it might even have been that game that we ended up losing the lead, we took Devy Cruz out. And it's one decision that, you know, you look back on and it's easy to say after the fact. But I wish we would have left Devy in there. But he had no range, and we put Cody Ransom in the game because he was a slick fielding guy. He had the range, and it was in the eighth inning, routine double play ball, and he kicked it. And they ended up tying the game. And that's one thing that will, you know, I'll take to my grave with me, that decision with Felipe to put the defense in. And people said, well, he was a young guy, you know, he wasn't ready for the moment. But we didn't feel that was the case. He just missed the ball. But Devy would have turned that double play, no problem. There's no doubt in my mind.
Hey, Ron, let me ask you a quick question. I'm going to throw a baseball question at you today. In the new era of baseball, they're looking for middle infielders, corner infielders, as well as middle infielders, to play all different positions, second base, shortstop, third base. Now, if you're an infield coach for many years, how hard is it for a player to do that and to adjust from third base to second? We see so many third basemen on shift go up the middle and they can't catch that ball. Is it difficult to teach that and coach that?
Well, it depends on the athlete. I mean, if you look at the guys that Dodgers have, they do it with Chris Taylor and Kiki Hernandez. You know, all these guys came up as shortstops. So if you take a premium athlete, it's like Brandon Crawford. He could go to third and he can go to second and do it just fine. But if you take a guy that's primarily a second baseman or is not a premier shortstop or that type of athlete, it can be difficult moving around the diamond, especially if you have to go to short. So, if you're an infielder and you got good hands and an accurate arm, you probably could play anywhere on the diamond. But I think you see a lot more errors because the guys aren't comfortable in those lanes on the field. When the shortstop goes right just on the second base side, the ball looks different coming off the bat. Guys are going like Longo was going, you know, from third, and he's going way over to second now. It's just you don't get as many reps with the ball in that area, so it comes at you different. So it does take a special player, in my mind, to be really, really good at it. Typically, your shortstops are the ones that can move around the field. Not everybody has the aptitude and retention or the athletic ability to go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
Boy, you guys are great. You guys are a treasure. I mean it. Now you are, the both of you. You know this stuff so cold, and, whoa, it's just great to hear these stories. So it's another Saturday night. Boy, this is getting to be a routine. This is pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Well, I've enjoyed it tonight, Marty. It's the sun is set and it's gotten dark, so it's just like a night game, like you said. We started at 7:15, and that's the Giants' start time. So we must be closing in on 10 o'clock now.
Yeah, well, it feels like it. Just let's hope your sprinkler works this week and you're out of the garden. Let's hope that happens.
Well, the only thing I got to say to the professor is he's doing these night games with us, Marty. He's usually on the field. He does a morning show with you on Sunday, so this is a total different aspect for him.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, Bill. I can't lie to you. And I know Marty will go. He'll go to 10 o'clock at night. I know we've only been on for about an hour or so, but Marty, keep up the good work. You do a fantastic job, and I enjoy listening to you driving home back to the East Bay after the ball games. And Bill, I know you're on at night as well, and enjoy listening to both of you. So it's been a lot of fun tonight.
Very good. All right, we'll talk to you guys next week, Bill and Woe. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep, stay safe.
You got it.
All right. All right. All right. More coming up on 104.5 and KMBR 680. We're going to talk to Bruce Jenkins next, and keep the name Steve Dalkowski in mind, a very famous minor league pitcher. And Bruce and I are going to remember him for a minute or two. All right. More coming up right after this.